are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. I'm Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with my co-host David Ramil. The top four teams in the West played Monday, and the top four teams in the West won on Monday. We're going to rank our top teams in the conference and then pour ourselves a bowl of cereal later on. But let's start in Chicago, where the Bulls fired head coach Fred Hoiberg on Monday. Bulls executive vice president of basketball operations, John Paxson, said in a statement, "Decisions like this, are not very easy to make. However, I felt this was the right choice for our organization at this time. After a thorough evaluation, I elected to make this move with the overall development of our team in mind. As a team, I believe it is imperative that we make unfaltering strides in the right direction and build the right habits to help put our players in the best position to evolve, not only now, but into the future. I want to thank Fred for his dedication and efforts, blah, 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 blah." Assistant Jim Boylan will take over as head coach for the rest of the season. But David, the Bulls are 5-19. They recently got back Larry Markkanen, so that's a good step, I guess. But isn't the timing of the firing kind of weird here?
There is so much to break down here. Like, I feel like, obviously, all of our fans should listen to Locked On Bulls for a much more in-depth coverage of the firing and what happens next. But from my perspective, can I just say that John Paxson's comments here are absolute crap? Like, that is ridiculous. It is unbelievable to say that they're concentrating on the development of the team when they've made so many moves that are kind of antithetical to exactly what they were trying to build there. Hoiberg never really got a fair shake as far as the kind of team he wanted to take over and build, you know, with shooters and a fast-paced team, similar to what he did at the college level. Instead, they brought in Dwayne Wade. That completely changed things. They added Rajon Rondo. And even this season, look, I mean, Markkanen was hurt. LaVine's kind of rounding into form. Jabari Parker certainly hasn't been the kind of player they expected when they signed him in the offseason.
And they were the only ones that expected that.
Yeah, I mean, they saw themselves being 20-4 at this point. Everybody else was like, no, you're right on a path that we projected as far as being a really bad team. You know, as far as the timing here, I guess it makes sense from what I've heard, and I talked to some people closer to the situation. They said that he just completely had lost the locker room, and not surprisingly, considered the fact that, you know, he was never really. He never really had the team that he wanted built. You know, he was forced to take over Jabari, who's struggling still after coming back from injury. You know, it's been a difficult transition for him from the college level. I think he's still good enough to be an NBA coach, but this team in particular wasn't his type of team. You know, he was a little passive. He wasn't really as engaged as a head coach. He was certainly a huge difference from Tom Thibodeau, but that's not saying much. And I just think that it's very, very odd for the Bulls to have fired him right now. I guess they saw that a change was necessary sooner rather than later, although we all, I think, saw that Hoiberg was going to be fired at some point. Just wondering why they did it when the team is at 5-19. Like, it makes any difference. They're not competing for a playoff spot. They're not competing
for
anything.
I do wonder if it is actually what Paxson was saying and mentioned that they want to develop the talent. Maybe they felt like, look, Hoiberg's not developing the talent that we have. This is really important with Lowry coming back, with Wendell Carter Jr. Probably being ahead of his schedule from what everybody expected, but a very promising young rookie. Sure. Like, look, we don't want to waste another 60 games. We're not seeing player development here. Now, you're right. Did he lose the locker room? Yeah, but he lost a locker room full of players he never really wanted. It felt like, you know, it's like he lost a bunch of things that he didn't ever want in the first place. And there is definitely something to be said for what this front office has done the last several years, which is kind of go back and forth with what they wanted to do. I mean, they had done all the right things in the summer of 2016 as far as not sort of buying in to, you know, the big name free agents or like the no name free agents to big name free agent money. And they had, you know, kind of gotten all this cap space and then ended up blowing it all on, you know, late in the offseason when Dwayne Wade decided, you know what, I don't want to be in Miami anymore, and paired him with Rajon Rondo and Jimmy Butler and decided, like, yeah, this is going to work. And it kind of did work, and you almost got to credit Hoiberg for that. I don't know. Maybe you just credit Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler and Rajon Rondo for just being good players, but they were up 2-0 against the Celtics in the first round, and then Rondo got hurt. Well, either way, this front office is just
Well, can I bring up that point, though? You say if development is what they're concentrating on, and Hoiberg wasn't exactly taking the team in the right direction, isn't the best example of whether or not a player is being developed Lauri Markkanen, and the fact that he was missed the first 24 games of the season, kind of hard to gauge whether or not Hoiberg's developing the young talent on this team at all? Was he not using Wendell Carter the way he was supposed to?
Apparently there was issues happening in practices and behind closed doors. I mean, we heard that report Boylan kind of took over the practice in the preseason while Hoiberg was off doing like a media scrum interviews. Maybe he just lost control of not only the team, but the staff and everything like that. Look, I'm not trying. Somehow I've ended up defending the Bulls here. I don't know. I don't know why.
Garpacks.
Yeah, I don't know how I ended up in that corner. I want to, let me dig myself out of here. The whole thing is a bad situation from top to bottom. Look, they've had 11 head coaches since Phil Jackson left in 98. That's a lot of head coaches.
That shows a lot of consistency there, I think.
Yeah. But now, look, we've had two firings into the season. We've had Hoiberg. Obviously, Ty Lue got fired after a couple minutes into the NBA season. I wanted to ask you, what is the better head coach job, the Cavs or the Bulls?
You know, that's interesting. I can't say that either team has a glut of talent at this point. I think Markkanen is probably the best young talent on this team, although you could say that maybe Zach LaVine might be that player for Chicago. And I think the best overall player right now is still Kevin Love, despite the injuries in Cleveland. So depending on what your priorities are, whether or not you feel you can be a better coach as far as developing young players, and I think Chicago is probably your best bet, although I don't know how Jabari ties into that. Obviously, that contract is a little bit troublesome because we don't expect him to ever regain the form that he showed early on in his career in Milwaukee. But, you know, a point I brought up to you when we were discussing this before the show was that in Cleveland, at least there's less pressure, I think, to win right now, because I don't think anybody expects that this team, 1 year after losing LeBron James, is going to be in playoff contention anytime soon. They're probably bound for the lottery, and that gives you an opportunity to continue to build the team, add mm-hmm. young talent, and continue to develop the players that they have. And again, you have Kevin Love already on that roster, so that's a good opportunity to have a superstar already in place. Plus, there's no pressure because you won a championship a few years ago. So it's not that big a deal. It's not like anybody's expecting to bring a title anytime soon. But again, the pressure of having to win and win now is a little bit less. You know, for a team that won a title just a few years ago to all of a sudden be back in the lottery just a couple of seasons later, doesn't usually happen. But in Cleveland's case, again, I think it alleviates a lot of the pressure from whoever takes over.
They're not as thirsty as Bulls fans, basically, right? And right.
Yeah, it's decades of mediocrity, basically.
Look, I kind of look at things this way: is okay. Neither of the teams are good, right? If they were good, the coaches would still be in place. So they're already bad teams. So it's not an issue of which team is better. They're both probably going to be in the top four or five of the lottery at this point. Who has the better young player or players? Who has more cap and roster flexibility? And then who has the better ownership situation? That would, if I were a coach, those would be kind of my three main criteria, and then we go from there. Like, for example, I'd rather live in Chicago than Cleveland. That would probably play a factor. But let's just stick with those first three things. Well, as far as ownership goes, both ownership situations suck. So that's a tie. And if these are the only two coaching jobs open, well, there's only 30 in the NBA. So I guess I'm taking one of them. And the better young players, I go with Chicago. Absolutely. Lauri Markkanen looks like a great player. Wendell Carter Jr. looks better than Colin Sexton at this point. You mentioned Zach LaVine. That's a nice player. Jabari Parker, yeah, disappointment, but there's also more roster flexibility with Chicago than there is Cleveland. Now, Cleveland's going to be off of most of their bad contracts within 2 years, after 2 years, where Chicago, it's going to be about a year earlier, and they still don't have as many of those like $10, $12 million salaries that Cleveland does. So they're a little bit more flexible. If I'm a coach and I want to get in there, and maybe Garpacks is like, you know what, maybe we learned our lesson from last time, which, you know, you can keep hoping. No. But there is an opportunity at least there, right? There's a realistic opportunity. There's the means to get to a roster that you want to coach, where in Cleveland, you're probably a couple of years away from that.
I don't know. I think with Garpacks in place, it's like they're never going to build the right roster.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
they'll shoot themselves in the foot somehow.
Kobe Altman hasn't done a great job in Cleveland, you could argue. Like, I don't know if I trust either of these GMs to figure it out and either of this ownership group to figure it out. So if it's between the two of them, I'm just like, all right, well, at least there's a road in Chicago where I don't really see the road in Cleveland. You know, you're at least 2 years away from competing, and there's really not a young piece that you, a piece there that you really feel great about. Colin Sexton,
but there will be this year, this well, after this offseason.
In Chicago too, though.
Good traffic
in Chicago too. You're going to have that
sure, no.
situation. So I, for those reasons, it's tough. Like I don't want any of these jobs, but if I'm an NBA coach, like I said, there's only 30 of these things available, and if you have a couple of these available to you, and I got my pick of the litter, I would probably pick Chicago. You know what I mean? But like you kind of just like hold your nose and jump in. Before we move on, let's check in on the other scores from the night, David.
Okay, we've got the Oklahoma City Thunder in a close one, 110-83 over the Detroit Pistons. The Golden State Warriors were able to pull ahead over the Atlanta Hawks, 128-111. The Cavs, again, on their way to the winning streak there, 99-97 over the Brooklyn
Maybe I was
Nets.
Wrong.
The Washington Wizards.
Maybe
What's
I was
that?
Wrong. Maybe the Cleveland job, maybe they're turning things around.
Yeah, you see. The Wizards pulled ahead over the New York Knicks, 110-107 behind 27 points from Bradley Beal. The Denver Nuggets in a close one over the Toronto Raptors, 106-103. That was almost going to go into overtime there, but did not. Jokic with a triple-double, 23 points, 11 rebounds, and 15 assists. And the Houston Rockets dropped one to the Minnesota Timberwolves, who keep finding a way to win without Jimmy Buckets, 103-91 over the Rockets. The Clippers, 129 over the New Orleans Pelicans, 126.
This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. You didn't know you needed it, but you do. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels, not dissimilar to that of a heated car seat. If you've ever driven in a car with a heated car seat, it's awesome. Do that for your body. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees. They're powered by rechargeable batteries that last up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone while you're wearing them. Two birds, one stone. Perfect for any friend or family on your holiday gift list. Great for anyone who works outdoors. Those people that you know that like to spend time skiing. Anybody that loves the outdoors or just hates being cold. It's toasty warmth and comfort from head to toe. They have heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, even underwear. Heated products that fit everyone's budget. And it starts just at $39.99. We've got a special deal for our listeners. Save 20% off your entire order. Just go to actionheat.com/lockedon to check out everything that Action Heat has to offer. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Or use the coupon code LOCKEDON at checkout to save 20%. Stay toasty and warm while you enjoy all of your favorite outdoor activities this winter with Action Heat. There were a few close games Monday night with Denver getting a clutch win over Toronto after Nikola Jokic's triple-double and a pair of game-saving free throws there at the end. The Clippers beat the Pelicans thanks to Lou Williams icing the game with a pull-up jumper late. Meanwhile, the Thunder and Warriors took care of business on the road, which means each of the top four teams in the West won on Monday night. And now it's starting to feel like those teams are beginning to pull away a bit from what has been a very competitive conference so far. Each of those teams are a solid game up on everybody else in the conference. But if you had to pick one of those teams to drop out by the end of the season, David, which one would it be? Again, we're talking about Denver, the Clippers, the Warriors, and the Thunder.
Oh, Wes, this is impossible to answer. I mean, look at the Western Conference. 14 teams separated by 5.5 games in the standings. That's really, really difficult. Any one of these teams could drop out of the top eight. By the end of the week, it's just really difficult to perceive how they'll be after 82 games. But you're putting me on the spot here, so I'll have to make a guess. To me, I'll have to say it's the Clippers. I feel like there's going to be a point here where Doc Rivers isn't going to be able to get as much out of this roster as we've seen so far. Look, they played really well. They're playing at a nice pace. They're getting some really key contributions from some unexpected sources. I like the team. They're a lot of fun to watch. A lot of people projected them to be out of the playoff rotation. And so I have to stick with that original prognostication and assume that they'll probably wind up dropping out of the top four at some point. The Golden State's simply too good. The Nuggets, I think, are a really well-balanced team. They've played really well defensively. They can score a lot of points as well. They've got a lot of home court advantage there. And as far as the Thunder is concerned, I think they're playing defense at a really, really great level. And that's without Andre Roberson. And, of course, you've got really great playmakers in Russell Westbrook and Paul George, who's having a career year as far as his overall assists are concerned. So a lot of talent there. Again, I have to defer to the Clippers if I have to pick one of them.
I feel like I agree with you. I'm working on a piece right now about the Clippers, and so I spent some time with them when they were over here in the Bay Area, and Kind of diving into the numbers there a little bit. And there's a few things that are really, you know, positive for that team. Like, they're number one in free throws. This team is just going to get to the line all the time. So they're going to get easy points even in the absence of sort of that star scorer. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have a Nikola Jokic and a Jamal Murray or a Westbrook and a Paul George, or certainly they don't have the stacked roster that the Warriors do. But they figure out a way to create consistent points that way. They're not great, but they're good at basically every stat. Otherwise, they're number one, so they're elite in free throw shooting, and they're pretty good at everything else. So there's not like one glaring weakness on that roster. That said, 10 of their wins this season, I believe, have come in the last 5 minutes in what the NBA defines as clutch time. So that could kind of go either way for the most part, and they've been good in those situations, but they've also been a little fortunate, and you kind of expect that maybe to regress a little bit. Their defense isn't stellar. It's about league average, if not below average. And I do think that you're right. I think that eventually teams will start to figure out how to game plan against them. I think they just caught the NBA by surprise a little bit. They're hard to scheme against. You don't really know who their number one scorer is going to be and who you want to key in on. So a little difficult to scout for in that way. But eventually I think teams will figure it out. And then maybe you start, and look, it's just by process of elimination. The Warriors are too good not to be in there. Denver, I think, is not a surprise team. Maybe it's surprising that they're number one right now at the time of recording this, but Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, Paul Millsap, Michael Malone coaching that team, we knew that was going to be a good group this year. And then the Thunder, absolutely. The Thunder, we thought there was going to be an addition by subtraction there. They don't have Carmelo Anthony. So we thought now with Paul George and Westbrook, that's going to work out. And they've been a playoff team for the last several years, so I'm with you. I think it's the Clippers. But as far as the rest of the Western Conference, it is. I do feel like the Thunder, Warriors, and Nuggets at this point. Like, the Rockets, they lost again Monday night. I don't know when they're going to get things right there. Utah, same kind of situation for them. We figured that those would be two of the top four teams in the West. It wouldn't surprise me by the end of the year if it was the Warriors, Thunder, and Nuggets as your top three teams. Those have been the best three teams this year. Let's talk about the Thunder a little bit. After starting the year 0-4, a lot of people started to write them off. They're 15-3 since. They overtook Boston for that number one spot in defensive rating. You mentioned their defense, David. They're the best defense in the league, and it's not even very close in the last 10 games. And now they've been in the top half in offensive rating the last 10 games. When you have Westbrook and Paul George, you're just going to score enough-ish, like you're going to be at least an average offense, and if they can get some contributions from other guys, specifically from that shooting guard spot, I think this team could be really good by the end of the year.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, they're not exactly fun to watch, no. I suppose, but I think Billy Donovan is able to get them to play defense at a high level, something that he's prioritized during his tenure in Oklahoma City, and it's paid off. Paul George, obviously, has long been one of the top defenders in the league. Steven Adams, probably underrated at the center position. Russell Westbrook is still a sieve defensively, but they have enough other players there to contribute at a high level as far as their overall defense is
Paul
concerned.
Paul George, by the way, that's without defensive player of the year smoke a little bit happening right now. Like, he's playing really
well. Yeah,
really,
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, and it probably would have, you know, been even better, I think, with Andre Roberson, who is an exceptional defender. Probably, you know, obviously his offensive woes are well categorized there, but I think at the same time, he's probably underrated for how good he is defensively. So that's definitely a loss, and I'm curious to see how he's incorporated back, whether or not that changes anything once he does hopefully return from injury. But at the same time, they've been good. Look, they've been getting some nice contributions from Dennis Schroeder. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody ever saw that.
The backcourt with him and Westbrook together is working. they let Schroeder kind of just be Schroeder, which I guess is the only choice you have when he's on your roster. But Westbrook off the ball for some reason is still enough of a decoy. I guess teams are, you can't give him enough space to cut, so they still sort of play up on him a little bit. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, a Schroeder, he's making plays for them, and they haven't really had a good, you know, complimentary playmaker in the backcourt since Reggie Jackson. So it's been a number of years there.
I was going to skip over Jackson and say since James Harden. Jeremy Grant's given him something nice, too, since he's been added in the starting lineup. They're still, I think they're a move away, and I think they could do that. I think I wouldn't shy away if you're them. Maybe moving on from Roberson, who I still think would have trade value despite the injury. There's teams that really need a player like that. They're the number one defense without Roberson. I think that you could be okay without him, and if you're able to trade maybe him, a Terrence Ferguson kind of situation or something, maybe move a couple of these pieces to get a legitimate player at shooting guard, this team could be really good by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's fair.
Any other teams in the Western Conference that you're expecting to make a leap here at any point? Memphis looks good. You expect maybe Portland to figure things out? They're 3-7 in the last 10 games.
No, I think Portland is. Look, they had a nice hot streak there. And I'm writing a piece on Portland right now, so I feel, unfortunately, a little down on the Blazers. I think we've seen this play out before. They're somewhat okay defensively. They have some nice talent there, but at the same time, so much of what they do offensively is key to Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, and they've only got one other double-digit scorer on that roster. That's Yusuf Nurkic. And there are too many games where he's not really there as a factor. So, if you limit either Lillard or McCollum from putting up a 30-point night, there's a good chance you're going to be able to pull out a victory over Portland. I just think they're going to continue to
Start. Song and dance for Portland, basically, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
One thing to look forward to, I know the trade deadline is all the way in February, but December 15th, again, that's the day where free agents who signed over the summer could start getting traded. That's like the unofficial kickoff to trade season in the NBA. I expect a lot of moves to start being made ahead of that February trade deadline in the West. Because like you said, 5.5 games separates a lot of these teams. And you kind of want to get a leg up on these teams while you can, because every game matters. So why wait until February to make a season-changing trade when you can do it in mid to late December? I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of teams, even in the Eastern Conference, where there's a lot of teams now towards the bottom that might be on that tank train by that point, start to maybe sell off some of their veteran players, the Kent Bazemores of the world and stuff like that, the Wayne Ellingtons of the world, maybe start making their way to the Western Conference, where some of these teams start being buyers, where I think a lot of these teams in the East might be sellers. But let's look ahead to tonight's games after this break. It's that time for our favorite game here on Locked On NBA Tuesdays. It's called Cereal or Not Cereal, where we break down the biggest games of the night and decide whether or not they're good enough to enjoy with a delicious bowl of cereal. If you're excited to watch the game, then it's cereal. If not, not cereal. Play along with us. Let's get to our first game, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Chicago at Indiana. We spent a lot of time on this show already talking about the Bulls. Are you excited to watch the Fred Hoiberg-less Bulls against the Victor Oladipo-less Pacers?
Absolutely. This is a game that's going to be so packed with excitement. This Bulls team is going to find a way to respond for their new head coach. They're going to be engaged, athletic, explosive. It's going to be so much fun to see them going up against a Pacers team that's probably going to be without Victor Oladipo. This is definitely not cereal. I'm sorry. I had to try and convince myself, but it's not going to work. This is going to be an ugly matchup, to be honest with you. I'm not sure if either of these teams is able to reach 100 points. So unless you think differently, if you can convince me, I'll be open to it. But reality is, as it stands right now, this is a game that I'm not even going to pay attention to.
Not cereal. I mean, I tried to find a way. You know, Chicago, Zach LaVine's kind of fun. Like, he dunks and stuff. Like, Indiana, they've got two players that I care about watching, Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. One of those guys is probably going to miss the game. Sabonis comes off the bench, so he's not even there to start the game. Otherwise, I don't know. I can't watch Chicago's point guards kind of just run into the wall over and over again.
Who do they have at point guard right now? I mean, Campaign, I know he's like their third string point guard, right?
I think it's Nate Robinson now. I don't know.
Is Derrick Rose still there in Chicago?
7:30 p.m. Orlando at Miami. Rivalry of Florida. How do we sell this? People have been like, you think Orlando's fun to watch? We talked about this last week.
Yeah, and then, of course, they dropped a couple games since then. So I've just
the David team, Stink.
I'm happy to say it. Yeah. Look, the Magic, I think, they can still be a little fun. I think Miami's going to avenge their season-opening loss to the Magic. That seems like an eternity ago, but it was actually just over a month. And Miami's won two games in a row. So I think this is a good opportunity for the Heat, to close out a homestand with their third straight win there. But at the same time, I think the Magic are going to keep it interesting. I think Miami's just found a nice way of getting points there. I think, look, if Hassan Whiteside doesn't play as much as he normally does, then Miami has a really good chance to pull out a win there. And Dwayne Wade has played at a pretty high level. I don't think anybody on Orlando's roster can limit what Wade can do offensively. So I think that's a key for Miami. To me, it's a cereal game.
Really? Okay. I mean, yes, we have to watch it anyway because we have to record a recap after. But like, if this was an advice column, I would advise not to watch it. I don't know. I don't think that there's.
I don't know. Look, watch for Nick Vucevic. I mean, that's going to be a fun matchup there with Whiteside or
Adebayo. That doesn't sound fun to me. I don't know. Vucevic versus Whiteside. I just watch Vucevic dominate Whiteside like he does every time they play. I don't know. DJ Augustin maybe doesn't Bam make me start. Excited. I don't know. So
look, he's solid. He's okay.
You're really selling me. 8:30, Portland at Dallas. Now, this game is serial, David. Look, you've got the Portland Trail Blazers who are kind of in a rut right now. We talked about this before. They need to turn things around. And Luka Doncic is kind of a bully. And I don't think he wants them to turn things around. And I think he knows that they need to turn things around. And I think he's going to thrive in that situation. I always really like kind of that rookie with that bravado, kind of overly cocky, overly confident kind of guy going up against a legit superstar and just to see what happens there. Now, Doncic isn't going to guard Lillard or McCollum for most of the game, but he's going to get switched onto him, and there's going to be moments there, and I'm watching for those moments. Give me Doncic with his irrational shooting. Give me Damian Lillard, which is the closest thing to Steph Curry outside of Oakland with his 27-foot pull-up threes. I'm all about this game. Portland and Dallas, mark me down. That's serial.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still early enough on the East Coast where I can enjoy it. So I think that's a great opportunity to watch these two teams. Doncic, obviously a lot of fun. Dame Lillard, long been a favorite player to watch, and I think that'll be a strong factor there.
Is Doncic
and
your
it's gonna be at Dallas?
Is Doncic your rookie of the year favorite right now? I think he has to be, right?
No, not necessarily. I think you can make a strong case for Jaren Jackson Jr.
You love Jaren Jackson.
Thank
you. Sacramento at Phoenix at 9 p.m. No. Not cereal. Nope.
Neither of those teams. Yeah, not in
Phoenix. Phoenix is going to be without Devin Booker.
Ooh, that could be ugly really fast. Although it's at Phoenix. Yeah, I can't see much to get excited about that. That's definitely a no cereal in my
book. I can watch De'Aaron Fox some other time. I don't have to watch him against the Suns. 9 p.m. San Antonio at Utah. This could be interesting. You've got the Spurs who are not interesting to watch this year. You've got Utah trying to kind of turn things around. It feels like they're a little bit better lately. Maybe I'm just saying that because they beat Miami the other night. I don't know. But they've got Donovan Mitchell there. I always like watching Donovan Mitchell. I don't know that this is, like, if you had to pick between 9 o'clock games between Sacramento, Phoenix, San Antonio, and Utah, I'd probably go with this one. But thank goodness Portland and Dallas starts at 8:30. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's some fun matchups to watch there. Utah coming back after a 3-game road trip. They've played so many games on the road, which is, you know, we talked about the strong teams in the Western Conference. I'd expect Utah with a home-friendly schedule to figure out a way of getting back into that top four conversation there. But I'm not sure they'll be able to keep it together against the San Antonio team that's still looking for an identity right now.
Yeah.
They're struggling. They've had a number of players go out with injury. And, of course, they're incorporating DeMar DeRozan, who's still DeMar DeRozan. He's still the same player that he was in Toronto. It's not like that's going to change anytime soon. So it's still an interesting game. I'm going to go no cereal on this one, to be honest with you.
I will say this. Don't be surprised if sort of late night you start getting these Twitter notifications that Donovan Mitchell is going off for a bunch of points. Like, the San Antonio defense has been really, really bad, and especially that backcourt hasn't been able to stop anybody. And if you've got Donovan Mitchell there, he had 18 points in that loss to Miami. I said it was a win for them, but he had 18 points in that loss to Miami. But before that, 30 points against Charlotte, 29 points against Brooklyn. Yeah. He's starting to figure it out a little bit. Would not surprise me if, like, you get this late Twitter alert saying Donovan Mitchell trying to go for 50 here. We've gotten so many 50-point games.
You're overlooking Ricky Rubio, too. I mean, he could go off for a big night.
He's a good shooter now, apparently. That's all we have for today. If you're not already, you could subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes and listen wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find David and I over at Locked On Heat for the rest of the week, so go ahead and subscribe there as well. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.